Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Hi, this is Mike Behe. I've been a senior fellow with Discovery Institute for over 20 years. When the Darwinian establishment was enraged by my book, Darwin's Black Box, the Discovery Institute was there for me through thick and thin, and has been over the years for my intelligent design colleagues as well. It is your financial support of ID the Future and the Discovery Institute that makes all of that possible. Please consider giving a donation today to support scholars of intelligent design. Go to discovery.org/csc/2020 to give. That's discovery.org/csc/2020. Thanks.
Hello, I'm Andrew McDermott. Today my guest is Dr. Jeffrey Simmons, a retired internal medicine physician and a fellow at the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. He's author of Billions of Missing Links and What Darwin Didn't Know, both published by Harvest House. Dr. Simmons has studied the human body and evolutionary theory through a career that has spanned 45 years. He's also lectured on intelligent design in Spain and Israel. His latest book is called Are We Here to Recreate Ourselves? The Convergence of Designs. In a review of the book, Kirkus describes it as a wide-ranging and often engaging discussion of the workings of the observable living world. Simmons makes a unique case for intelligent design by discussing examples of complexity in nature, as well as humans' own innate interest in recreating versions of themselves, from dolls to robots to clones. Jeffrey, thanks for joining me on the program.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Well, we're going to discuss your new book over three episodes of the podcast. Today, I thought we'd explore why you wrote this book, and we'll look at human development from conception through birth. In the introduction to your book, you tell us that nothing humans have created comes close to the design of human beings. And this is a quote from your book here. We're made of designs, within designs, you say, working in parallel, opposition, and or succession. Well, let's start at the beginning. You've written previous books that were successful in laying out a compelling case for intelligent design. Why did you write this particular book?
It's interesting what happened. I've written two books on intelligent design, and I sat down to write some more material. And the question why kept going through my mind. And indeed, it connected with some thoughts I've had forever. I can't place how far back, but not only why did this all come about, which is not an uncommon question, but how and how it ties in. And I've been lecturing on intelligent design around the world, in a sense, at least a couple of countries in this country and on international radio. But why, if God or an intelligent being designed us, why? I mean, if you design a car, you do it for a reason. If you design a building, it's for a reason. Design a ladder, it's for a reason. So why? What is the purpose? And so I started looking closer at our life, and I could see there's a parallel between what's going on in technology and recreating ourselves in the form of a humanoid, and compare it to intelligent design. And if you're showing how the robot is being created, you can also talk about how the human is created and show how much more complicated it is, even though the robot is very complicated. And so I started seeing a pattern. First of all, a pattern for me was, if there's design, there must be purpose. And if there's purpose, there must be foresight. And if there's foresight, there must be engineering, and then convergence. And then basically the spark of life, which we will talk about a little later. And so what's going on? I braid intelligent design with the theory of evolution to show where those fit in and don't fit in. And I connect it to what's going on with humans. And it was almost like it was laid out for me to do once the idea occurred to me. I couldn't stop writing it.
Well, these are really interesting topics to probe. And as we do look at the machine age and artificial intelligence, it is really useful to look at what they're copying, you know, biomimetics, you know, just copying of biology, and in particular, the human form and all the design that goes into that. So I'm glad we're having this discussion. Well, when it comes to the design of humans, you really have to start at the beginning. What evidence is there for intelligent design in conception?
You know, that's the argument. Is there evidence, or is it just a belief system. And in fact, you can't prove that it was done by an intelligent designer. You just have to find these clues. Although I think I have found something in the neurological system that actually is proof that we didn't come along by evolution. And I'll be discussing that in the next session. It's highlighted in my book as well. So the beginning is, I start off a lot of my lectures with childbirth, because to me that's striking that this had to be designed. And if we look just at conception, or even just a little before conception, we don't have sex because we have to. We don't do it because there's nothing else to do. We do this because we're drawn to do this, and I think that's part of our design. We're attracted to each other for certain chemical and physical reasons, some reasons we don't understand. Involving ourselves in the sexual act, one has to note that the way we go about it is compatible physically. One part fits with the other, and one interacts with the other. There's no history of past trial and error. It has to be right. And then the sperm has to swim in the right direction, in the right way, at the right speed. And the egg has to pop out of the ovary. And note, we have at least 500,000 eggs, we do, meaning females. No one knows why that egg in particular matures and pops out. And how they meet is incredible. I mean, they meet, it's like finding somebody by accident, just walking in, say, New York City. Could you do that without directions, without some chemical attraction, some electrical contraction? There's got to be some design to get them together. And then have the sperm start combining with the egg is unbelievable. Which sperm does it pick? Why does it pick that one? Or is it just first one that gets there is served? It doesn't seem so from the literature that I've looked at. Meanwhile, the egg rolls, in a sense, down to the uterus and implants itself. There is a plan in foot, at foot, or whatever, to get a foot in the side of the uterus and start connecting to mom and getting all the nutrients and oxygen that that baby's going to need. This can't be accidental. They can't have a fertilized egg just dropping into the uterus and maybe it lands on the side, maybe it doesn't. But even if it does, what does it do? We see design, purpose, foresight, engineering, and convergent here. This egg has blueprints, the DNA. And think of a phone book, the old phone book. Those of us who are older can envision that. But think of a very thick book that's torn in half, two of them, and then two halves are put together, combining each of the two books. So, and they fit perfectly together. The page, whatever, 900 is with page 900. And so they're all together. Well, this is not 900 pages, but millions of pages that fit all together. And they do this within hours. This is design. And there's a purpose afoot. There's a blueprint. All of a sudden, this egg starts dividing in half, that divides in half, and it starts making the parts of the body. And it's got a plan, and we all have this plan. At 7 weeks, the unborn child is about an inch long. A lot of its organs are obvious, probably there sooner, like the spleen and the liver and the intestines. At 8 weeks, fingerprints and toe prints are there, and traces of the brain and spinal cord are there. At some point, more than 250,000 nerve cells, neurons, migrate in the brain to special locations. That's like swimming, crawling, jumping, whatever they have to do. They know where to go. They know how to connect up. Just setting this up by accident, one nerve cell at a time, would go beyond the life of the earth as thought to be. And so at 12 weeks, the vocal cords are there and the lungs are there. But note, there's fluid in the lungs. The lungs don't work. It's just amniotic fluid. The baby's body diverts their blood to the placenta and the umbilical cord and gets it from the mom. And so the lungs don't need to be breathing. Notably, when the baby is delivered, it's just the opposite. That connection breaks. And I'll talk about more of that in just a moment. So as this child starts developing, it follows a pattern. When it's 10 weeks along, it's 14 weeks along, all the way along. We, in medicine, can take a film of the baby if we need to and tell you exactly how old that baby is by its size and what's developed. It goes to program. It's got purpose and foresight. The foresight is incredibly there. It shows planning, engineering, definitely planning.
Yeah. Well, you write that life processes are loaded with changes that anticipate future needs. Do the converging systems of a developing human being follow a blueprint?
Actually, yeah, and I was getting at that. And the blueprint tells the baby when to come out, sends a message to mom, I'm ready, start the engines. Mom sends a message back and the baby comes out and it has to breathe at a certain time. It's very, very important. Otherwise, it dies. If it doesn't breathe, it dies from lack of oxygen. If it breathes too soon, it dies from lack of oxygen. And so the timing is very specific. That suggests purpose and engineering. And we're off to the races as far as development goes. And if you look at us all, first graders look like first graders. Adolescents look like adolescents, and they do things that adolescents do. Folks who are in the period of reproduction time to create babies, they're the most beautiful of all of us. We all kind of get ugly, some of us at least get uglier later. But we look our best, we're our healthiest, we're their strongest, and that's when we conceive, that's when we can take care of kids. As years go by, menopause comes on time with, you know, some plus or minus years. And aging, it looks the same. I went to a reunion of 50 years after medical school, and everybody looked old like me. I mean, we're all following a certain pattern. We're all designed to follow this pattern. And indeed, I'm writing now an article for Evolution News about programmed death. I think this is programmed in, and it's a big discussion perhaps to follow as to why, and that's certainly beyond here.
Yeah. Well, I'll ask a little bit about that later. You talk about the excitement and wonder of that moment when you first experienced childbirth as a med student, meaning delivering the baby, of course.
Right.
You describe it as one of the most dangerous events in an individual's life, when so many systems and processes need to line up exactly to have success. Tell us about some of the evidence for intelligent design in childbirth.
Well, I was getting at that just a moment ago, and as this child comes forward and breathes on the outside, the blood has to be diverted back to the lungs. All the time the baby was in there, it was bypassing the lungs. The lungs had blood supply so they could survive and grow, but now they need to work. So there's a artery that closes, so the blood goes to the proper place, the lungs. Anytime there's an error in that, it does happen that there's an error on rare occasion. It has to be fixed surgically. But a baby can't survive without that. And where'd that come from? Nobody knows where it came from. The timing, the engineering here is unbelievable. The baby has to know how to suckle, where to suckle. And we see this in the animal kingdom all the time. I mean, the kangaroo, Joey, the baby, has to travel the distance of a football field to get in the pouch to suckle. Our babies know how to suckle. Mom's arms, I think, are designed, and I talk about this in my book, to cradle the baby in such a way that it can reach the breast with ease. And of course, there's a message that goes to the breast, hey, you're going to need to be feeding the baby. And that starts actually with conception, and it builds to a point where there's usable milk. And it's just not milk, but it's milk that's complicated with enzymes and hormones and antibodies. It has a purpose. It shows planning or foresight. It shows engineering. That baby is going to cry because it's got the vocal cords, unlike some animals and certainly anything before mammals. It won't be able to see yet. Its brain is like a sponge, however, sucking up information. One wonders, I mean, how they show up unable to talk, and the next thing they do is can talk a language. In fact, there are kids come from families where there's multiple languages who all of a sudden start talking multiple languages. That brain is sucking up information like crazy. Actually, it's been sucking up information while it was in mom. They know that it can recognize mom's voice on the outside, sometimes dad's voice. It shuns strangers. The whole prospect is incredible. I delivered about 100 babies, even though I'm an internist. I did it mostly in my training. And it was a miracle to me each time, the love that you could see between the parents and the baby, the bonding, which is instant. It's such a pleasurable event, despite pain that mom has to go through to get there. And notably, I skipped something, which is important. The baby has to be pushed through the birth canal. Her head is too big to get through if it's front to back. So the head turns sideways to get through.
Such an amazing process and set of systems that's working concurrently.
Absolutely.
Well, as we wrap up this episode, I just want to turn to something you mentioned earlier. In your book, you argue that we have built-in planned obsolescence. How is that, and why do you think that is?
I don't know why. I'm exploring that. I think since there's a reason for everything else in my mind, there's a reason for this. And I could get into a lot of philosophical reasons, but I can't find one yet. And I think this is going to be an ongoing discussion for me when I'm giving lectures later on. But it's obvious that we're geared for this. It's obvious that we're geared not to be having babies as we get older, partly because our health, partly because maybe we would pass away while the child was young. So the women go through menopause, men's sperms diminish and change, and it happens to all of us. And this is happening long before the industrial age. We live longer, but we don't live beyond 126 years, so it seems. And it's, like I said, I think it's part of the fabric. There's telomeres on our chromosomes. They're like the plastic ends of shoelaces that probably fall off kind of keeping track of time, like a timer, and it's time to pass away, or it's part of the process. We have these DNA links or traps of sort, not links, but where they connect. And suddenly when they open up or close, we're not immune to cancer or we're not immune to heart disease. And it's like it's programmed in. And we know heart disease and diabetes is programmed in.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll unpack some more of that later. Jeffrey, that's all the time we have for this episode. But thanks for setting the stage for us and giving us some great examples of design in the early development of the human body. On the next two episodes, we'll look at different aspects of the human body, including vision, hearing, smell, taste, touch, our senses, and explore how the convergence of these designs points to intelligent design instead of undirected processes like the selection mutation mechanism of Darwinian evolution. We'll also explore how efforts to mimic biological design, and in particular the design of the human, is fueling artificial intelligence and machine learning. In the meantime, get a copy of Are We Here to Recreate Ourselves on Amazon. And you can listen to other episodes of ID the Future at idthefuture.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Until next time, I'm Andrew McDermott for ID the Future. Thanks for listening. This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.